Alexa, open Brave Words Radio.
Welcome back to Brave Words Radio, brought to you by Vox Protocol, the global leader in voice app entertainment. Brave Words Radio is an awesome musical extension of bravewords.com, where we have been waving the flag of hard rock and heavy metal around the world for over 30 years. Since you have been here before, we hope you enjoy Brave Words Radio.
Hello, everybody.
Mercy Boogie. Mercy Boogie. Mercy Boogie.
I'm Metal Tim from Brave Words, and it is such an honor to sit beside the mean man right here. Wow, this is incredible. So, here, put your hands together and meet Mr. Chris Holmes. Dude.
What's up? How you doing?
I'm honored to be here. I'm absolutely honored to be here. You've been such an inspiration to, and all of us, I think, because we all want to be somebody, right? You dodged a bullet. Talk us through dodging a bullet.
The cancer bullet?
Yes.
Well, around Christmas, I was, my throat hurt, and it didn't get better. And it was just there, and I decided to go see a doctor, and they stuck the camera down my throat, my nose. It was like a COVID test, except a little bit longer. And he said something to her in France, and she looked out the ground, and I was like, yeah, it's cancer. And, so, and then they set it up to, the first doctor sent me up to go get an MRI, and that wasn't until the end of February. I was like, what the if I got cancer, wouldn't they want to know that right now? You know, so we went to another one that would do it in a week or so. One of my friends just went to stroke cancer about a year earlier than I did. So I talked to him once a month. So I knew it wasn't a death sentence, so it didn't kill me. I just knew I was going to have to go through a lot of radiation and chemo. And once that was done, I'd be okay. As I did, went through that. Just, my throat feels like I got RTV silicone in it. It sucks. It's just it's like glue still to this day. I can't taste anything. But I'm getting better. The kind of cancer I had is treatable because some people get cancer and they don't have a chance to. The doctor said, yeah, we can treat you. You're gonna make it. And I was dead a week later. That's just a drag. But luckily, I knew mine was treatable. So and I didn't get, like Frankie Benelli, the good friend, drummer, a friend of mine, he had pancreatic cancer. I think it's 95% of the people die within a year of diagnosis. And sure, he was gone. So lucky I didn't have that kind of cancer, you know. I'd have to deal with it. Yeah. I'm getting better.
So thankfully you're here with us. Yeah. What lifestyle changes have you had to adapt to?
My weight went down. I have to wear a belt now. I don't want my clothes. I've never worn a belt in my life. But I gotta wear a belt now, and I keep those clothes, so when I do gain weight, I'll probably be back to where I was. I don't know. I definitely won't smoke anymore, and I quit drinking years ago, so that doesn't matter. But I vaped until about 2 years ago. I'm not gonna go back to vaping. And, my life is just.
So can we expect that plumber's ass when you're playing tonight? Can we expect the plumber's butt when you're playing tonight? Because your pants fall.
No, I got a belt. gotta go.
Yeah, yeah. In all seriousness, as metal fans, there's been a lot of heavy metal deaths in the last few years, and they've all resonated to us because we grew up with them, but a lot of them, you were friends with. So the friends that have died, not to be morbid, but everybody from the Warhead guys, Eddie Van Halen, Dio, like, talk to us about, like, living, like, surviving, number one, and then, like, seeing all these legends, all these friends that you grew up with pass away.
One of the closest friends of mine, today's his birthday, is Phil Fiano, the Taylor promoter. That's why I got his shirt on. Today was his birthday. He was probably the closest friend that I had for a long time in the music business. Eddie Van Halen was a childhood friend growing up, but it got to the point where he was so big and did his thing, and I was doing the Wasp thing, I was in a puny little band compared to Van Halen. So I didn't really bother him all the time, but we were still friends. We were in contact all the time, you know. I will say, I remember 2 days after his child Wolfgang was born, somehow we linked up on the phone and we were talking about it. And I said, the Metal Years came up, something this and that. And he goes, fuck, man, I gotta grow up now. I had a kid. He's telling me that. I go, I guess you're gonna have to. The guy really never grew up. You know, he never grew up. And the reason why I don't have kids is because kids should not have kids. So I'm mentally about 15, still to this day. You know, I don't think like an adult. I never have, and never probably will. It's sad. And about the friends that have died, Lemmy, he was close. It was sad when Van Halen died because I'll never, you know, I haven't talked to him since I went to Europe. So that's 2014. And I'll never, it was sad because I was like, man, I'll never talk to that guy again. When Filthy died, I was with him in London. I saw him about a week before he died, and he was he died of liver failure, and they were pulling out like a quart a day out of his liver, and he wasn't drinking shit, so you can't sustain that much. You're not gonna be living that long. I had the car was there gonna take me to the airport, and he was laying in bed, and I go put my hand on his head. I go, Phil, I gotta go. And I go, it's probably the last time we'll ever talk or see each other. And he shook his head and said, yeah. And he was gone, you know, next week. And I figured the longer I stay alive, the more I'll see more people pass, you know. About a month ago, Steve Grimmett from Grim Reaper, he sang on a solo album, my last record, called Plane of Fire. And he called me and asked me to play on his record. And I said, yeah, no problem. And I was discussing how he could send me the tracks and stuff from England through the internet. He didn't. He wasn't that knowledgeable about how the digital stuff sent, you know. And I was explaining to him how he could send me the song, how I'll play and send it back, and how I can just put it up on his computer ready to go. And then he goes, so you getting better on your cancer? And how was the treatment? Blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, well, man, I'm sure glad I didn't wake up and have my leg missing. You know? It was a joke. Because he got his cut off.
But you think you'll see him in hell? Do you think you'll see him in hell?
No.
Can we go back to Eddie? Because I love this story. Arguably, if you're a Van Halen fan, Women and Children First is maybe the greatest record that they ever did. And you, your guitar had a big part of that rock record.
Yeah.
This was in
the 77. He had bought an Ibanez Destroyer. He didn't have enough money for a Gibson Explorer. They're probably about $650 in. The Ibanez is only 210. You know, he bought one, and I like the shape of it, so of course I went and bought one about a week after he did. And he painted his, did whatever, blah, blah, blah. I left mine. I don't know if I painted it. I bonded up the front pickup because I didn't use it. I didn't like it, and I think I had stickers over the pickup hole. But anyway, I had miscalculated a corner on my motorcycle, and I was strung up in the hospital. This was during, right before Women and Children First. And he came into my hospital and wanted to borrow the guitar for his album. I go, yes, go by my mom's house and ask her. And I go, can you leave me a guitar to play? And he left the one that's on the album cover there.
Wow.
Yeah. Right. Wow. But then he wasn't really a big star then. It didn't matter. I got a picture of me playing it somewhere. I just borrowed the guitar. You know. He had cut up a chunk out of his guitar and made it. He made it from a what was called a destroyer into a star body and ruined the sound. And mine wasn't cut out.
You grew up watching him. What did Eddie think about your guitar?
I never asked him. I was embarrassed because he hated Wasp. Yeah, he didn't like it. It goes back to the Starwood days when they were playing the Starwood, and that was Blackie's hangout. And some people liked the guy and some people didn't, and Ed didn't like him.
I don't want to talk about should I say that? Where he walked in the room?
I got a funny story for you. I was in Ed's tuning room during the Black Sabbath tour, and Tony Iommi and I went to the show. And I never told Tony that I knew Ed, even when we were on the road. It didn't hit me in my head. I didn't care. You know? He didn't ask any questions. And then it was a night off in Atlanta. And Van Halen was playing, I think, 5 nights at the Omni, which is, 20,000 people. So 5 nights, they're going to play 100,000 people. And we're playing the Fox Theater, a little dinky place in Seattle. And so Van Halen told my tour manager, their tour manager, that he wanted to see by the night. I'll come down and see him. So I went with Tony Iommi down there. And then we were snorting blow. This had to be 86. 87, we're in Ed's tuning room, snorting blow, drinking, John and I, the guitar star, bullshit. And Tony just found out right then that I knew Ed real well, and we were talking. And walks Blackie, he's welcome. And you don't walk into a room with three guitar players unless you're a fucking guitar player. You just don't. And Ed looked at me and goes, who in the fuck's this dickhead? And he turned around and walked out. I felt bad. But you should not walk in that room like you're welcome. He wasn't welcome. Because around Eddie Van Halen, fuck his dick, and he walked out.
So here's a question. How would you compare Blackie to David Lee Roth?
As a human being? Or as a singer?
Both.
As a human being, Dave's 1,000 times more friendlier as a human being. Even though Dave wasn't born in California, he's a California native. He's been there long enough.
He had all the California girls.
He's Californianized, but he's not born there. He's really, either was Ed. Ed was born in Holland. But they lived there since they were about 6 or 7. Once you're there as a kid, you're there. As a singer, I'd rather listen to Dave Roth any day than somebody's dick.
Why do you think Wasp really connected with the world, the music fans, and the artists? I've talked to so many artists, and even some of the most extreme, like black and death metal guys, and they tell me, wow, that first Wasp record was like, that did it.
Well, Blackie's voice nobody's like sings like it. He's got a phenomenal voice, what he does. When he sings, he even told me I can only sing one way, and what I do is like nobody else, which is true. And the songs before 84, not too many bands had come out, but I I personally, you know, after Defenders of the Faith came out and Born Again, and then to me, the Wasp mix is kind of little puny guitars. I was always telling me I want this stuff. I want, you know, they'd be like, shut the fuck up, Chris. And I know better than bother the producer, you know, so I keep my mouth shut. You guys just do your mix and I'll go along with my life. And I don't personally like the first Lost album because the drums are like, they're not rock and roll drums, they're shuffle beats. I like Love Machine, but that's the double bass. Most of them are doo-de-bop-a-doo-de-bop-a-doo, you know, little jazz beats, but that's...
When we spoke about a year and a half ago during the Zoom, during COVID, yeah. You actually brought up a really revelation, like the first Wasp record had all the band members on it, and yeah. then after the fact, they were erased aside from the main, like the front man.
Yeah.
How'd you guys feel?
I didn't like it, you know, but what do you do when he's the boss and said this is gonna go be, go, it's when you work with somebody that's a narcissist, you can't win, so, you know, you wanna be on the cover. You see, and he even told Randy and I, the manager said that. I even asked the manager, he said, I never talked to him about that. But that's just, it's called an ego. And after that happened, I didn't give a shit about the band. I was like, I'll just do whatever. At least I go out and play. And I play for what I play. And the audience, I never, you know, the guys on that side, they can take it and shove it up their ass. I'm playing for me, for the audience. Do my thing.
Rest in peace. 2 days ago, when we were on the phone, we were talking about Benali and Headless Children, and he didn't dodge the bullet. And that is a really fucking powerful record. So tell us about that whole era and working with, like, my God, the drums on that record. Holy shit.
Yeah, Max Norman actually produced the record. He started producing it, but like, every other record, the first record, Blackie makes sure he got in a fight with the producer, who was Mike Varney, and he's gonna finish it and get his name on the album. He couldn't do it with the second album, Spencer Crawford. And then Blackie decided, you know, he's gonna produce the third album, which is called Inside Electric Circus, which to me is a piece of shit. It's embarrassing to even play on. It's not rock, it's not heavy rock. I like Sabbath, you know, I like the fucking grinding guitars, and it's just happy-go-lucky. To me, that's my opinion. It's not everybody. I'm not everybody else's opinion. Headless Children, I got into it with Blackie before we were writing the songs at his house, and I said, I want it to sound like this, or I'm not going to fucking play on it. I mean, you might as well disperse the band now. You know, so he said, well, you can play all the guitars. I go, well, that's the way it's going to be. And why it's halfway through the album, we were recording the drums first, and we did, and it's really shitty what they made Frankie do, but I guess it was for separation. He played the whole album, just the skins, no metal, no cymbals, no hi-hat. They recorded it that way. Then he came back in and sat on his drums, and then they recorded the cymbals. After it was for separation, I guess. I'm not a recorder. I'm just analog recording, Max Norman's idea. After the drums were done, Blackie made sure he got in a fight with Max Norman, and he was gone. And then he could be sole producer of the thing. But Benali, he did a phenomenal job playing on it. He was a top-notch drummer. He's probably played on, over, by that time, 100 albums. That is a name he didn't even put on. He did Moni Moni by Billy Idol.
Right.
And they called him in on tons of sessions, and his name never even made it on. He's good salary. And that album sounds like that because of Frankie Benali and a guy named Mikey Davis that engineered it and mixed it. And Blackie, he'd just come in and just listen to what we did and just okay it, and that's it.
But really, Mental Health was like a pretty remarkable achievement. It was like the first number one album. I mean, it was a huge deal. So how did
16 million albums?
Exactly. So how did Blackie or Wasp like invite Benali into the whole situation? Why?
Well, I've known Frankie because I worked the guy who gave me the number for Sister named Pete Castle. He played a band called Scarab. This is 1976. Rudy Sarzo was in the band. Frankie Benali, my friend. Peter Castle, and the singer was named Tony Basil, the singer. And that's where I met Frankie. And Frankie was in the LA scene, hanging around with Greenville and all that crap all through the, and the Starwood all through the 70s and 80s. So, you know, him and Blackie knew each other. And his time in Quiet Riot was up when Heather's Children started. So we were mixing the live album, what happened with Steve Riley. We were mixing the live album, and the mixing board has these digital, they don't have view meters that go like this, they were digital, they go up and down. And during that, I fucked like a beast. It was kick drums and the snare was I looked, and the kicks were not going like this. The snare was doing it, and the kick was going up. And I go to the engineer, I go, play that back again. And he did. And I said, so move the kick drum and snare. And Riley turned the beat around with the snare, which was lazy. Wasn't doing the double bass. And I went to Blackie, he was in the food room doing something. I go, come here. Did you know Riley changed this song around? And I had Dwayne Barron, who's the engineer, play it. I go, check that out. Did you know that? He goes, no. And he called Riley up right then and fired him. Fired. You're fired. Fuck you. Pissed him off. He would have never noticed that. And that's when I'm in the discussion about having Benelli play. You know. But Frankie was it was nice playing with a pro. He was the best drummer that my personal thing is he was the best drummer Wasp ever had by far.
Here's a loaded question. In the idea of like marketing and music and everything, has any vodka company approached you about representing them?
No.
Why the fuck not?
I don't know.
Are they fucking stupid?
Maybe it's because my guitar said Budweiser. And I did do a video when we did I Don't Need No Doctor. I was using the Budweiser guitar and they called up and said, we're gonna sue you if you don't edit, because they had to edit the guitar out. And I had to use a different one. That's why the video's kind of weird. It shows me two different guitars. And what it was it wasn't Budweiser. It was Dean, I think. And then they wanted me to use their guitars or some shit like that. Another company is, it's all business. Pissed me off.
Here, yeah. Cheers to Budweiser. It's like water. Just saying. Fuck Like a Beast.
Yeah.
You guys play it. Blackie is like hesitant when it was built and performed, and we know the vulgarity and all this stuff, but it's a great song.
Yeah.
So should Wasp play it? Should you play it? Do you care about it?
I play it. No. I think if, because he says now it's his religious beliefs or whatever, I think he should change the lyrics so I fuck like a priest.
And back to marketing, we need a Chris Holmes little action doll. The famous thing that Lemmy said, it's like I don't get any action. Like, so why would I do a fucking doll?
I have a friend of mine who works in the business of making monsters and all that stuff, the rubber stuff. He said he wanted to make a rat feet doll. And he said he was going to carve it. They carve it out of plastic and they redo it all. We moved to Europe by the time he was going to do it. You know? I know they make a Blackie doll somewhere. I know that. I'd be kind of embarrassed if Chris doll were, unless they sold it at a bar.
Well, there's a bar right here.
Is it so that I put myself on top of all the alcohol, booze, and be okay?
What's the riff that you would have wished that you had written?
Black Sabbath. I like it. Just the notes, the demonic notes.
And how about a riff that you're most embarrassed about that you did write?
Would be not Wild Child. Would be I Want to Be Somebody.
Really?
Yeah.
You should be wearing like some Richard Simmons attire or something like that.
Listen, the album Born Again just came out. you know, and Defenders of the Faith.
I love that. When you told me that story, my God.
And his wasp little puny guitar sound. Don't you think I'm going to be proud of that? No, man, it's embarrassing. But they couldn't. When you play live, it's a completely different situation than doing an album.
But you know what? As fans, which we all are, when you told me that story, I'm like, wow, these musicians actually are fucking paying attention to what is like. So in terms of collecting and listening and at the same time, you're paying attention.
I wanted it to be mixed like Black Sabbath. You know, but it probably wouldn't have, maybe it wouldn't have sold. But there's, if they mix it so Blackie's voice way up in the mix, you know. Look at the, have you ever seen a video of the Wild Child? Yeah. Have you ever seen the video? They cut my guitar solo out. You know, you think I like that? No, fuck you. Fuck off. Fuck you. You know, really did that. You know.
What's left to conquer for you? What's left to conquer for you?
I'm just happy I live day by day. You know, if I wake up tomorrow, I'm going to conquer tomorrow. That's what I look at.
There you go.
I live day to day.
Now it's time for the questions from the crowd. If there's somebody here that wants to talk to Chris.
All right. Oops, boy. Jesus. Sorry. You guys come and see me if you have a question. I got a mic. Come and stand with me, so we'll be able to. You'll be able to ask a question to Chris.
And if you don't have questions, I'll go downstairs.
Laszlo's got a question for you, Chris.
Yeah.
Awesome shirt, by the way, brother. And I'm just curious, as a guitar player myself, have you ever?
Where are you? Right there.
Right here. I'm the guy wearing the Eddie Van Halen shirt.
Okay.
But just a question, as a Jackson fan, a guitar player,
right?
Did you ever have discussions with him about maybe shifting the guitar?
No.
I'd buy it.
You mean Grover Jackson, the owner?
Yeah, I'd buy it.
He mentioned something when they made me the Headless Children guitar, and then I got, they made me, it was a shape that I liked, you know? And he mentioned something about it, and then he sold the company, and he was gone, and I just never looked up, cared about it then after that. But I am going to do a signature series of mine coming up next year, which is of a Firebird guitar, yeah. With camel paint on it.
Well, we got Anthony for you for a question.
So you were starring in that, you were in that unreleased Randy Rhoads documentary. What's the status on it? Is it ever going to get released, or?
I haven't talked to the guy that filmed it for a long time. He said he was having problems with Sharon Osbourne doing it, you know, to release it.
And he mentioned that Sharon Van Der Randy or something?
The guy's name was Peter Markolis. And he did George Lynch and all the guitar players of the late 70s around L.A. scene. And he's, you know, what we thought of Randy, playing with him, being around him. You know, I was lived right by Burbank, where he's from, Pasadena. I was in between all of the rivalry between all the shit. And I did a document. I did my part in a swimming pool. But I don't know if Sharon's ever going to okay him to do it. He's got to get okay past her, you know. Is that cool? Is that a good answer?
Any more questions? Any more questions? There you go. Carl's got a question for you, Chris.
Chris?
Yeah.
How do you feel about being compared to Ozzy as a resemblance? Back in the 80s.
Compared to what?
A resemblance.
You resemble Ozzy in the 80s. How was that with you?
In the 80s.
Yeah.
You resembled Ozzy back in the 80s.
Yeah, well, I just, because we'd wear the same kind of makeup and do your eyes, you know, like that. You know? It's, you know, it's 2022 now. The 80s are gone. Gone. You know.
Anybody else want another question?
Just
okay,
right,
come.
Did I tell him right? Give him the right answer. Is that the right answer?
Steve's got a question for you, Chris.
Hey, Chris. You guys talked about riffs. Do you wish you had written or would you didn't like book? Are there riffs or two that you did that you do like in private?
They're sick. So you gotta hold the mic closer.
are there riffs that you did in the past that you're particularly proud of?
A riff you're pretty proud of.
Yeah, I'm proud of. A Wasp one.
Yeah, sure.
I like the Heretic. I like the Heretic. The Heretic, I like that. I like the Headless Showman riff. I'm proud of that. Yeah. That's the only Wasp album I like. Believe it or not, when I came back to work with Wasp back in 95, I had to go to my friend's house and borrow the albums that I fucking wrote to relearn them, because I didn't listen to them at all. I had to play them to remember the shit I played. It's kind of funny.
I've got a question.
Yeah.
Was there ever like a moment when you heard a guitar player and you just fucking threw your guitar down and like, oh my God, I'm blown away. I'm done. Somebody that really impressed you. I know that's not on the list, but was it Joe Bonamassa? People always say Joe Bonamassa.
He's good. I can never play as good as that guy. But I ain't gonna throw my guitar down and walk off. And I still like to play regardless. I like to play. I enjoy it. But there's some people that are so schooled because I can't read music. I can't read English. Period. So I can't read dots.
This is Drunkenese, by the way.
Yeah, it's French. I couldn't tell you what it is. When I first saw Malmsteen play, and it said in 82 or 3, I was like, wow, man, this guy's phenomenal. And just no way I could play like that guy, there ain't nobody, I'd play with anybody on stage, that don't bother me.
Like, with fans that really admire your playing, do you, what do you think you bring to the table? Like, what makes you unique as a guitar player?
I hope it's the sound. I'm into the guitar sound, It's the sound of what you hear, Most guitar players, they play through one amp, and you got two ears, not one ear, two. And it's a difference between when, I don't know if you remember when FM took over,
yep.
And from AM,
yep.
AM's F mono,
yep.
FM stereo, and it makes a difference when some things are stereo, but most guitar players don't understand that, they just turn up the amp. I'm lucky to be brought up and where I worked at Sirwin Vega to understand all the processing stuff and how it all works. I've just learned from just being around the music business to help me dial in my sound. I hate having to go someplace and play through one amp, play through this Marshall. I'll do it if I have to and act like I'm enjoying it, which I'm not. but I'll act like I'm getting, I'll just go through the motions. I don't like the sound, but I still do it. I've had to do it a bunch of times the last 10 years.
We talked about this before. This might be the last question. I know we're running out of time. And I always, in my head, look at Jeff Beck's Guitar Shop, and with you and your relationship with Eddie Van Halen, like the major fucking tinkerer, behind the scenes. And you're like, I think you guys connected as like the tinkerer and like and the screwdrivers and, like rebuilding and building and...
He tinkered way more than I did. He always said he's a tone chaser. I found a tone that I liked, and I ain't chasing nothing else. I like it. I already found it. But he called us. I was always chasing to get a better tone. And I like what I play. I like what I use when I play. And it's the Draggy's dead, but to me, he's besides Jimi Hendrix, was the best guitar player there's ever been.
What's your favorite song on Women and Children First?
I like The Cradle of Rock. Women and Children First, I'd have to, I couldn't tell you what album. I don't know.
Guys, I love this guy. This is fucking huge.
The Cradle of Rock on that, right?
Yes,
that
absolutely.
Yeah, that's one I like.
Yeah. Dude,
This is rock and roll royalty right here. Yeah, I know. We're good. Thank you so much.